Kendra, is that Downton Abbey?
Yes, it is.
Loved that show.
I know, me too.
On twice.
Have you seen the spinoff? That's like the upstairs, downstairs.
No. What's it called?
I can't remember. I was talking to Christy about it yesterday.
Oh, I'll have to look for that. Yeah, I only watched that show last year. I didn't do it while it was hyped, and so I just, my husband and I went through every single season and watched the movie. I thought it was so well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's actually where I found out about the Spanish flu.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Another shiny day. What do you think about the beard so far?
Looking good, Corrigan. You're looking good. You're almost past where your wife can sleep with you. You know, you're not rubbing her too bad, right?
Yeah, I am. I'm receiving a little bit of pushback on the marital front over this. Donna compared me to a homeless person yesterday, which hurt my feelings a little bit, but oh well. We'll see how long I can sustain this. It may not make it. We'll see.
Well, I could say, well, we're jobless, and you know, because we're just commissioners, we're jobless.
Well, you know, there are people that would like to see us jobless, Commissioner Monger. So. All right. I believe everybody's here, and I believe I see Mo potentially in a couple of different locations here. But Mo, we look forward to your update. And maybe we're going to continue to look forward to it. Mo, are you with us? Well, while we're waiting for Mo. Mo, you're at the bottom of the well.
I'm not, this is my only meeting with
Perhaps Kendra could pick out one of or more of the Mo's so that you're not getting multiple Mo sound.
Mo, try again. I'm pulling from your phone now for audio.
All right. How's this sound?
Perfect.
Here we go.
Okay. We had a pretty productive meeting this morning. I'll just go right to the lines of operation and cover some of the key points. As far as the public outreach communication, as you're aware, a lot of messaging is still going out. The one thing I know Robin's also working on some of those business light cards that will describe the five responsibilities, as well as provide some key links or phone numbers that people can contact should they have any questions about testing and whatnot. So I don't know what the delivery will be on those. I think, Rob, I know you're on the line. I think you said about a week or 10 days, something like that.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, thanks. The one thing we did discuss a little bit was that I know personally, I get a lot of news feeds about a lot of the resurgence and spikes in COVID cases from those states that are opening up. Opening up their businesses more and the public more and getting rid of the mask requirements and whatnot. So we're going to try to incorporate, or Robin's going to try to incorporate some of those stories, I believe, in her newsletter as well as maybe in the webpage to better inform the public of why we're at the level we're at and once again emphasize the risk of trying to opening up too fast. So that is one effort that we're going to embark on here shortly. As far as the data management, no real updates there. We continue to provide the updates and update the dashboard accordingly. I know last week I spoke and there was no appetite at this time to provide the quantitative analysis. So we have not made much effort. We are still looking at it. In case we get to a point that we do want to implement something like that so we could have it prepared, but we will not implement anything until this form determines that is necessary, but we will have something in place should we elect to do so. We spent more time discussing the mitigation protocols. When I briefed last week, I mentioned that Scott and I went out and did 10 businesses, and since then he's received some support from those that were available in a couple other departments, and they started going out this week. I believe now, if you're not including the restaurants, the spreadsheet that I saw from Scott was that we visited, I think, 24 different businesses now, and out of those businesses, to include the restaurants, we assess we're about 84% compliant with the protocol requirements. I will say that some of the comments, we're starting to see more violations, if you will. I think, I know when we went out last week and then a couple this week said that some of the complaints were from the owners or managers saying that the public was showing increasing dissatisfaction and not wanting to wear the face mask. I also know that this week I myself went into the Merck a couple times and there were several customers and employees without any masks. I did speak to the cashier and was told that they were told they didn't need to have them on. So I also spoke to Chief Tuzuski out there, Hayden PD, and he indicated that there's been a trend out there. So, and I know I saw a report, I think, from another business. So there is starting to be some increased dissatisfaction with employers as well as customers wanting to wear the masks or not wanting to wear the masks. Some other notes that Scott provided was that there's a waning diligence on health screening. I already mentioned the difficulty with customers not wanting to wear masks. One of the things that we saw, which looks like there may be a couple others, is that the businesses that are part of the chamber are getting regular information, but those that are not part of the chamber are not getting the same information. You know, I know one industry, one business that I went in last week with Scott indicated that, you know, that's a tough one. We put out a lot of information, whether it be news releases and websites and all that, and you know, you can't make people read it or look for it. So, or anyway, so that is a little bit of a challenge for those that aren't part of the chamber. And another interesting comment was that the conditions change at night and on weekends when establishments know that there's no oversight or less oversight. There appears to be some less compliance with enforcing the protocols, particularly the masks. So we continue to monitor. I don't have a schedule for next week, and I think it's dependent on the resources available to Scott. I said we have done about 25, and overall we're about, his estimate is that 84%. That's not a scientific number, meaning that they don't have a tally sheet where they're counting every person. It's more of a general assessment. Most of it's yes, no type of questions, and that's how Scott comes up with that number. But that's where we stand with that qualitative assessment.
Can I say a couple things about that, Mo?
Sure.
So just a couple thoughts. The first is that based on the information that I feel like we've received about the concept of applying for Protect Our Neighbors and going into that phase, one of the critical things is going to be the ability to demonstrate compliance and or enforcement within the community. And we certainly aren't interested in creating kind of a police state of this whole thing. Obviously, our goal is that people are voluntarily compliant, but I wonder, as we get more information about Protect Our Neighbors, how we can message out, you know, that we all have a goal of getting into that Protect Our Neighbors stage, and that in order to be approved for that, we are going to have to demonstrate that there's compliance within our community with these safety protocols. And so just a thought on in terms of incorporating that into the message and maybe trying to just help everybody kind of be on the same team with this whole thing and understand that this is a shared goal for the community and being able to move forward. And obviously there will always be people who don't want to follow the rules. And quite frankly, if we believe that, you know, you said it wasn't scientific, but that if we believe there's about, you know, 80%+ compliance, I think, I mean, that's great. We're not going to get to 100%. So I feel pretty good about that, but obviously the more information we can gather, the better. But it may also just be good to, kind of emphasize that shared sense of responsibility for being able to move forward with more reopening, and that Protect Our Neighbors information may be a good part of that.
I agree, Commissioner. I know at least when Scott and I went out, that was one of the messages that we talked about when we ensured them that we were just there to, you know, answer questions, get a general assessment. And we did have that conversation with them about, you know, it's important to us to open up more businesses or keep businesses open. So what we're really doing is just providing those conditions where we can, because the last thing we want to do is have to retrograde to a more restrictive environment because we get spikes, and most of them were very understanding. Those that, you know, knew about it, a handful. I think there was, one at that point when I went out last week that didn't know much about it. So I agree. One thing I would like to add, though, I was thinking about this yesterday, is as far as sending out monitors. I think it's providing a good service. I think they are very important. But from their point, from a point of view of a monitor, I think it's easier for them to go out and I don't want to say enforce because they're not enforcing, but to mention that, you know, if I go to the manager, for example, and say, well, you know, this is required, that's a much easier environment than going in there and saying, well, we really strongly encourage you to, and then if they don't agree with it, then, you know, there's more of a potential for, you know, that disagreement or argument, whatever the case may be. So it's just a
just food for thought there, but I agree that our message is that we're trying to keep things open, and if there is that non-compliance and we start getting spikes, then we really have no choice but to, you know, get more restrictive. Any other comments on that? Okay. I also, as far as virus suppression, spoke to Carrie talked, and she does plan on keeping the community testing on Wednesdays indefinitely for the most part. I know we have the rodeo grounds at least through July, so I brought up the question to see whether if the rodeo grounds did have some other requirements for the facilities, if I need to start looking for something else. So I'll be reaching out to the rodeo grounds again to see if we can extend that yet again. That's a very good location for public health. It works well for our special groups focus too. It's, they find it to be very easy to have a group of them show up in some vehicles versus the public health having to take their supplies out to their location. So we'll continue to pursue the rodeo grounds. I'll be contacting them to see if we can extend that yet again through August. But nevertheless, we do plan on continuing the community testing on Wednesdays. Also, we had a conversation as we're getting ready for fire season. As you may have seen, there's a fairly big fire down in Durango. Moffat County had one this last weekend, so things are starting to dry out. And I spoke with the U.S. Forest Service about how should we have a larger fire here, or even if we send some of our local firefighters to some of these larger fires, you know, the conditions that they often live under are somewhat ripe for any kind of public health problem. So we're looking at if we have these teams that may have to come here for, if we have a larger fire here, or if we send local fires where ideally every county would be doing testing prior to those firefighters leaving their county should they get reassigned or demobilized. And so I spoke to Carrie about whether we would have the test kits available that we could then test firefighters coming into Route County before they start working, living in that camp and working on a fire side by side with their own firefighters. And then should they get reassigned, once again, test them again prior to their departure. So looking at the numbers that we would anticipate, should we have a larger fire like that, Carrie believes we do have the test kits. I gave her a number of approximately 50, and that did not seem to be a problem. So we are working on a plan where if we have a larger fire that requires external resources, having them tested when they get here as well as when they leave. And then,
I want to interrupt here for a second, Mo. So I want to drag us back to the mask thing. So, you know, I agree totally with Beth what you said. You know that we need to sell this thing as a voluntary compliance thing somehow. Whether we get Robin and the PIO and even the JIC to come up, you know, even if we pay for some advertising, you know. This is an investment into our future here. And so that's how we need to be looking at it. We need to put that message out there somewhere. Just if it's just to ensure the variance that we've asked for and or moving in to protect our community or protect our neighbor, arrest, whatever. I think we need to start figuring out how we're selling that. And, you know, and again, everybody gets hung up on this mandatory thing and that, you know, we're telling you to do that. So I think we need to try to change the sales feature on that and try to send it into something that, you know, we're going to get rewarded for this. It isn't something that you have to do because of us. If you don't do it and we don't get whatever and we run into the situation that we're still at, you know, so we'll be here for a long time. So go ahead. That's fine. That's what your decision is. But so I don't know. I apologize. I didn't grab my moment when I was on mute and trying to deal with sending my kids out working today too. So the ranch work. So
those darn kids, Doug. I agree with Doug's. I love Doug's message about, you know, this is an investment. I think that's a great way to think about it. And I wholeheartedly support that idea, Robin. However you can kind of massage that.
And I don't dispute that at all. And I guess I'm just saying, from an emergency management perspective, while I certainly agree that that should be the message, and that is the message that I know Scott and I spoke about when we went out there. But the emergency management side of me, which tends to be maybe more skeptic, says that, you know, if we have a requirement and now we're starting to have customers that are not wearing it, it's not being enforced, you know, should it become voluntary, I'm more skeptical that we'll have that that full participation that we're looking for. And I think the key is just to have those monitors out there so we can get a good assessment of that. I guess that's my main point, is heavy on the monitoring so we can assess that, because I'm just not as optimistic that will happen if it's no longer a requirement.
I don't think Doug is suggesting that we don't, that we not maintain the mandatory nature. He's just saying, in addition to it being mandatory, we need some kind of a public relations campaign to help people understand why we made it mandatory and why it's in all of our best interests that we wear masks.
Well, and I think who cares if it's mandatory or not? To some degree, we still should try to sell it to people that they should do it. And we need to maintain that 80%+ compliance and not slip on that. And I don't think that starting to write tickets is the way to do it. I think that definitely selling it is as an, I love the investment idea, Doug.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, Mo, I think they work in concert. It's both together.
Yep.
Okay. And then on the last line of operation on the finance and admin, Carrie and I had a conversation with Chuck Sullivan at DHSEM yesterday, talking more about the FEMA PA program, and we are, Carrie continues to collect the invoices. We're putting together what they call a project. We believe this will all be one project, although what we may try doing is almost a test run, is find a project that is for the most part complete, meaning that we're not going to continue to have, for example, contracts for nurses that we're going to continue to have. So, but something, maybe it's one that came up was we can use one for the medical surge where we bought the mattresses and beds and some miscellaneous equipment, and we don't anticipate using that, not because we don't, it's not, there's no possibility for surge, but from the latest from the state, we'll be using their alternate care facilities. So we may prepare that as a separate project as kind of a test run for us, or get some practice before we submit the larger project. Then the larger project will be everything else. So we had some more discussion about the FEMA PA and the CARES Act. Dan was on the call today. I know he indicated some optimism that the intergovernment agreement will be completed in time to meet the July 7th milestone, and he talked a little bit about the, you know, the percentages that were being used and were discussed last week. So we don't have a definitive reimbursement plan yet, but we are continuing to gain more understanding. It is still our intent at this time to submit the FEMA PA program reimbursement first, and then use the CARES with our cost share, as well as other things that may not be eligible. That is still our general strategy going forward unless we get more information about if we should use the CARES money prior to FEMA PA, but we have not received any definitive information on that as of yet.
So, Mo, just as a point of clarification, I think I heard you say that you're going to be putting together a partial reimbursement request to FEMA rather than waiting to the very end of the crisis for a total FEMA reimbursement?
It's not so much a partial reimbursement, but the way the FEMA PA program works is you submit projects. So most of the time we're familiar with these, for example, and and there'll be, you know, a large flood destroys a bridge. So that particular bridge will be a project. It has a project worksheet, and you have to track all the costs. So for this, there is no real infrastructure. So the intent was to treat the whole thing as one big project. It goes forward. What we were talking to Chuck Sullivan about is, in order to just get more familiar with the process, we could create a second project. And so we can just carve out a section, like I said, maybe it's the medical surge piece, which we believe our costs will be done for that. So we can create a separate project and submit that at any point. So it's not a partial as far as a time frame, or we're only going to take 50% of our overall. We would look at one particular function, if you will, of our expenses, and then do a separate project, smaller scale, so we can, you know, make sure we're doing everything right before we submit the the larger project. Does that make sense?
It does, but I guess what my concern is, and as we've heard from CDPHE, is that we've been told to expect that this crisis will continue for the next 30 months. And some of these things that you might identify as a project, let's just say, for instance, some of these nurse contracts that we have could potentially be ongoing for the next two and a half years.
Well, no, that is correct. That's why I specifically said we would not do something like the nurse contracts. The one example, and this is only a possibility we're looking at, but the one example where we think that we will not have the expenses is the medical surge piece. And I say that because, you know, we did go out and buy some, you know, mattresses and some pulse oximeters and a few things like that. But then we got to that, the obstacle, which seems to be insurmountable at this time, where that UC Health would not accept a alternate care facility within Rock County under their umbrella, so that the result being that state already has a couple alternate care facilities, one in Fort Collins and at the convention center, that they had a transportation plan that we would move medical surge people to. So with that information, knowing that it's unlikely we will be building our own alternate care facility here in Rock County, we could use that as a project, because there will should not be any continuing expenses in that particular case.
But Mo, that probably still represents a small percentage of the FEMA-related expenses we've generated overall. And the reason that I'm kind of concerned about this one project at a time, and knowing that this is going to be going on for potentially a couple of years, is that to the extent that we're thinking about using CARES funding as a match for FEMA reimbursement, we've got a deadline of the end of 2020. So I guess my hope would be that we would have compiled and applied for as the largest possible amount of FEMA-related expenses before the end of the year, and not let $100,000 or $200,000 worth of reimbursements drag out past the end of the year. And that may not be possible. I understand it's complicated.
So that is the whole intent. The reason why we're considering, and there's not going to be a lot of projects, there would probably be, if we went down this road, there'll only be two projects. The only reason for the one is that it would help us, you know, learn the portal that we have to put things in. So if we find out that, you know, we don't have the right invoices, or we don't have the right signatures, or we don't have the right documentation, we're learning that with the smaller project. But the intent is that, correct, we would get the entire FEMA PA reimbursement in, well before the end of the year. At least we anticipate that with whenever they shut down the president's declaration and they time limit when the PA window is. The only intent was to work through a more manageable project, so because no one here has ever submitted an actual FEMA PA reimbursement request, particularly in the new portal that they have. So it was really just a way of working through the mechanics with maybe an easier, smaller amount to get more familiarity before we do the
overall FEMA reimbursement requests for everything else.
That's great. Thanks for that explanation.
Yeah, I really support that concept. I think a little bites of the pie versus the big pie, and you know, figuring out how to slice it up, you know, and then more into, you know, the short of having interim requests on the whole, slice the pie up a little different, and then be putting with things that are actually complete and done. That makes sense to me. Oh, I'm really supportive of that.
Yeah, I'll express support as well, and I'll just say that I am 100% confident that Mo understands how FEMA reimbursement works better than I do, and as long as you can prioritize getting us as much money as soon as possible, I'm all for it.
Okay, that's a pretty clear marching order. I got it.
Carry on, Mo.
So, all right, so with that, that really concludes my presentation today, pending your questions.
Nope. I'd just like to take the opportunity, Mo, to, you know, thank you. I think your patience and professionalism throughout all of this and has been reassuring to everybody on the EOC and reassuring to the commissioners that we've collectively been doing the right thing. So really, Mo, thank you very much for your work.
I have a question. Sorry, Mo. You can tell Commissioner Corrigan how great he is too if you want.
Well, I actually like it because I realize that I don't have the grayest beard around here, so it makes me feel good.
I'm just showing solidarity with the homeless community. So,
One comment I would like to make before it's not I want to hold it to the end just because it's not really an update, but we are looking at looking at an after action review process. I know state is looking at theirs. They provided some templates which I'm familiar with that we've used before, but we did send out a survey basically focusing on the EOC operation, familiarity with the emergency operating plan, the decision-making process, and then the continuity of operations. So it's not just because a survey went out, it's not, don't mean to imply that we're looking to do this next week. We just anticipate that it'll take, you know, several weeks to go through that and start doing some root cause analysis in order to prepare an AAR. So I don't have a date yet, but I don't anticipate it would be till August anyway, and I'm not sure if the state wants us to do them prior to their after action review or if the states can do theirs first. So we're just laying the groundwork for that, but I'm not trying to get too far in front and do something too soon, because I know there's a lot of response and recovery operations still going on, but I would anticipate it probably around the August time frame.
I have thanks, Mo, for that. I don't know if anyone has comments. I have something different I wanted to ask real quick.
Go ahead, Beth.
Mo, obviously, watching this fire in near Durango and seeing smoke in the air here just has that front of mind. I guess I'm curious how confident you feel about being able to continue with the recovery team operations sufficiently while also potentially handling a wildfire in the near future, and kind of how you're thinking about just being prepared for that possibility.
Yeah, that's a great question, Commissioner. You know, right now, as far as preparation, and has it been an issue, we had we resumed our fire chief's breakfast last week. We met with all the fire chiefs over the West Route station. We reviewed the tactical plan for meeting with our interagency partners, and our DFBC partners were there. So we are doing that. We do have another bi-weekly fire restriction calls with Craig Interagency, which review, you know, the conditions out there and the resources available. Good news is that the state has made a whole lot more aircraft available because they realize that there may be a limit on the actual firefighters that are available on the ground. So state has stepped up and provided more aircraft. So from a preparation standpoint, you know, we've been doing this now. We've been doing it for
in the preparatory mode for several weeks, and I think we're pretty comfortable with where we stand. However, like you said, is should we get a big fire, you know, all bets are off at that point. And if we do have a fire, then I do not anticipate that, you know, I'd be able to continue, at least during that time frame, doing these meetings. But until then, it hasn't been a problem.
So I guess the question on that then would be, do you have an idea of who would step in to lead the recovery team while you had to move into that role? Do you have a contingency plan there?
I mean, I guess if I was going to state it now, you know, it'd be one of the other members, you know, particularly Scott or Carrie Laudro. However, I know that both of them are extremely busy, but they would be the most likely candidates since they're the most heavily involved. The other one would be that since most of the decisions are about resourcing type of decisions and setting priorities, you know, it could be a function the county manager could do. But those would be the three recommendations I would offer at this time.
I guess I would ask if Tim and Doug would agree, but I would request that you discuss a contingency plan with the recovery team and make sure that everyone is aware of what would happen, because I don't think it's unlikely that that's going to happen. I mean, I hope it doesn't, but I don't think we should assume it won't. I don't know, Tim or Doug,
if you could do
that. Yeah, no, that just seems a rational course of action. Yes.
I will discuss that on Monday then at our next team meeting.
Yeah, it just seems the normal course of events. When you're down, you just keep kicking us, so we're good. So let's have a fire.
Yeah, thank you. As State Insurance Commissioner Mike Conway said, it's definitely going to be a bad fire year, because why wouldn't it be?
Well, we know that. You know, we have our fire restriction calls, and, you know, things are, you know, beginning to dry up. If you remember, Mill Creek in 2017 did start on July 4th weekend. So, you know, we are getting into that season, and it is a very real possibility.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, we have lightning out here in Yampa, and the wind is picking up, so all the kind of stuff we need to worry about.
Yes, my lightning tracker is going off while I'm on this call, so I know we're supposed to get some this afternoon.
All right. Any more questions for Mo before we move on to the emergency preparedness response discussion?
I just hope that lightning comes with a little rain, too. It's not just the lightning, but the winds, the tornado winds that we've had last week.
I don't think there's rain in the forecast all week, is there? I mean, it's definitely, we're drying out for sure.
Well, I think it's going to rain out here shortly, but I don't think, yeah, we've got some nice big dark clouds here, so looking like rain, keeping my finger crossed. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our discussion with our public health director about the emergency preparedness response situation. And that is what EPR stands for, right, Carrie? You should unmute yourself or talk louder, one or the other.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. Yes, it's emergency preparedness and response.
Great. So, what would you like to talk about regarding that?
So the contracts for CDPHE are on a different renewal cycle. They're on the July 1st through June 30th cycle. And so we have a few contracts actually that are coming up for renewal starting in July. And one of them is the emergency preparedness and response contract. That has two different components. It has a local emergency preparedness and response portion of it. And so the local EPR coordinator position, I've been fulfilling those deliverables for the local EPR portion of that. And there's a regional EPR portion of that. And so the regional contract is actually for four counties. And those counties are the Jackson County, Moffat County, Rapp County, and Rio Blanco County. And so the regional contract addresses those four, and that's a shared role from the regional staff person for all of those counties. And so we have to make a decision now. The contract was brought over as part of a transition that happened, as you know, last June from Northwest Colorado Health. And it's the opportunity now to make a decision about the contract as to whether the regional EPR contract will remain with Rapp County or whether there will be another decision made. And if it's another decision that's made, OEPR, the county manager, Mark and I had a conversation with OEPR and kind of talked through what the scenarios are. And they, I guess, on their end, figure something else out or do some additional problem solving or figure out how to support the region if the contract is not continued by Rapp County being the holder of that contract. So that's one county or one contract that I wanted to talk about. I think we were planning on talking about a couple other the other contracts that are coming for renewal, I believe, as well, Mark, weren't we? Yeah. Okay, during this discussion, and we'll start with the EPR contract. Okay. So for the regional EPR contract, I guess what I would offer about that contract is that we did learn from EPR and having some conversation with them that contract is not a response effort. It is actually a planning contract. So when we were asking some questions about, you know, what does this role support and what is the idea behind this contract, it's really for planning purposes and not for response. And so it was kind of an interesting learning experience to hear that, just because we have been so heavily involved in the pandemic. And while planning is definitely helpful and necessary, there's at some point a response portion of it. And the response effort, I guess, OEPR does not see that as part of this contract. They see the planning piece as being the function of that contract. So I would just alert you to the conversation that we had, that it's definitely a planning role that contract plays. And from my perception, response is also important.
I have a question about that. Why is the R in the name? I mean, that's a rhetorical question.
We did ask that question during the call because it was that's a little confusing or a little misleading. And it sounds as if Mark, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it sounds as if they have recognized that there's some opportunities within that function, that EPR department, to do some reevaluation of what their role is and how that interfaces with the local communities. So I think this pandemic has alerted them to some of the maybe the missteps in creating these contracts, and they're going to take a look at that is what I would say to that.
Yeah, Carrie, you're exactly right. That's I think a very accurate reflection of the conversation we had with the representatives, that they have indicated that they're going to go through a pretty comprehensive process to re-examine just exactly their mission and the goals and objectives for the program. Unfortunately, they said that it would not commence until 2022. So,
will we be done with the pandemic by then, or?
Well, as we all know, the government works slowly. The federal government works a lot slower. But there is a recognition that there is a gap there, and quite frankly, and you're exactly right, Beth. The response in the very name indicates that would clearly be something that would be part of their mission, yet it doesn't seem to be translating in terms of on the ground for these ERP representatives. So they know there's a problem there, and they're prepared to go in and correct it.
So just two things, which are related to the same thing, but one, you both are very diplomatic. This is stupid. It doesn't make any sense. It's completely absurd. that we would continue preparing for a public health emergency in the midst of a public health emergency. Why would you do that? Why would you continue preparing in the middle of a pandemic? And so that's point one. And then point two, which is also a question, how can, I guess it's, there's two questions. One, Carrie, I guess I'm wondering, has like CalPho or anyone sort of submitted some joint kind of comment like that? Like, this is dumb and you guys need to figure this out. And secondarily, how can we support just that message? Because I imagine we're not the only county that has realized that this is dumb. And personally, I would like to be supportive of just making sure that the state gets that message loud and clear that this needs to get fixed.
It's dumb.
I don't know of anything being submitted to CalPho on behalf of public health agencies. I don't think so, as far as I know. I would imagine this feedback, because I have heard this feedback throughout the state from public health directors, that there is a lot of confusion around this function, and they feel that there would be an opportunity for a lot of support right now that they're just not seeing. And so I can't imagine that somebody somewhere hasn't submitted that, but I'm happy to draft something up to Tracy at CalPho, or have at request that the commissioner send it if it's going to be more impactful, but definitely is an opportunity for some feedback right now.
So it's not.
My question, Carrie, is what would the, what's in front of us today is a decision as to whether or not to agree to the contract for the upcoming year's services for the regional EPR position. So my question to you is, are you recommending that we not sign that contract? And what would the consequences be to Route County if we decided to not be included in that arrangement?
I am recommending that we have discovered that contract is not the best use of county resources during a pandemic. And so that contract in and of itself is for $93,600 that we received for the regional portion of that. And so it would go back, essentially what it sounds like it would happen is that money would go back to the state to that program, and they would just determine then if there's another partner out in our region that would like to take the contract on.
So the consequence is we are no longer the fiscal agent. That's it, right?
The other consequence.
We stop paying for health insurance.
The other consequence, though, would be, I think, which was more what I was driving at, is that we would no longer then be receiving the value of the services of that individual.
So that when Mark and I had the conversation, they assured us that they then continue to provide this regional support to our region, even if the county is not the fiscal agent. And so it sounds as if then the next step would be for them to take the contract back and them to determine how to support our region with this capacity without Route County being the fiscal agent. Correct, Mark?
That's exactly right.
That makes my view on this quite a bit simpler.
So there are three other counties involved who are also not the fiscal agent. So
it's and we asked whether the other three counties might be the potential fiscal agent. They indicated that was probably not going to be the case. There is maybe the possibility, an outside possibility, that maybe it's not a 4-county arrangement. It might even be a 6-county arrangement or a 5-county arrangement. But Carrie's exactly right. The indication to us was that there would be another county entity that would go ahead and be the fiscal agent for this going forward. We would no longer be in that role, but we would still receive the services from whoever that regional rep would be.
So I need to get a chance here to speak here. So so this doesn't surprise me at all. And the regional EPR, and again, we all know how these things come about. We have a legislator out there going to make a great thing. He's going to make this thing. And, you know, counties can't work by themselves. We need to have a region. And so it's all a good idea. Great idea. So, but then, so this is why we have like 17 different conglomerations of regions, of different counties, you know, like our DA and then the COGS and the rest, and how all of them get together and, you know, without having some similar model across the board on how all these things work. I mean, this thing here, for instance, would be a great thing for a COG to be, you know, be the fiscal agent, you know, Council of Governments, you know, to be a fiscal agent and throwing the money to them. And then, by the way, we didn't ever have any commissioner input into this thing here either. It just got created. And by the way, you're a partner in it. So go out and do well, and we're all good. So
this is Doug's favorite type of program.
Oh, I love these things. And especially when we partner with Grand on one end for one thing, and then we partner with, you know, Garfield or you know, Montrose County on another thing. So, you know, it's all great intentions. You know, it's just the implementation. So, you know, for our discussion today, and since I still have the floor for a second, I'm totally good with not moving forward here with this. And let's throw it back at them, and let's have some commissioner input, you know, some collective commissioner input on the region on how it should be handled, and then not just thrown out there without having our Board of Health, because all of our region's Board of Health are the commissioners. So why aren't we participating in any of that? So as a collective group, so enough of my soapbox.
So Carrie, you have direction?
Can I go back to the letter, though, for a second, too? I think
sure,
you can just say, yes, I have to. Carrie, I personally would think that if there are a lot of public health directors that share this concern, it would be great for CalPHO to write something. But I also think that the commissioners, like Doug said, should be made aware of this issue. My guess is that a lot of the commissioners probably just don't even know this is a concern. And so if you would be willing to even just send some bullet points, I think we could bring it to other commissioners for some conversation and just say, hey, want to make sure you guys are aware of this, because we have some real concerns about it, and who would, you know, be willing to help us express those concerns to the state. I just think nothing gets fixed unless we have more people kind of pushing back on them. It's really great for them to say, yeah, we're going to take a look, but they won't change anything unless we have more pushback than just Route County.
Beth.
Yeah, I think it just needs to be restructured all the way around. It seems to me the whole thing.
You bet. Commissioners, because I know that you know, now we're talking about the dissemination of our frustration with the program, and I just want to let you know that I have shared that with our DOLA representatives, and I've not pulled any punches. I've been very straightforward in terms of our frustration with the program and our feeling that really it adds absolutely no value added to us and to the county and our citizens. So been very direct in those comments.
Well, and I think I told you guys that when I said something to Jill about it, she like didn't even know what this program was. Her first response was, wait, what are you talking about? And she had to like, we need to just make sure that this is highlighted, that this is a problem that needs to be resolved. So.
Very good. I think we've given good direction on that. You, Carrie and Mark, you wanted to move forward onto a discussion of some other CDPHE contracts? Please do.
Before we go there, back to Carrie and Mark, you know, we want to be part of the solution and not of the problem. And not be the fiscal agent in essence, but we're not discounting maybe the value of the program. It's just not right the way it's working right now. So I just want to make sure you guys, when you move forward, we have the right message sent out.
Yeah. Just so actually, I just noticed, I don't know if Brad Meeks is on listening, and I don't know if that this is related to this conversation or if there's something else he's here for, but it just reminded me that Tim had asked the question about their involvement, the involvement of this program in supporting our schools. And I was just wondering if there had been follow up on that or not. I have no idea if that's why Brad is here or not, but it just sparked my memory.
Oh, I think he's here for our public works item.
That makes more sense. But it, I was just wondering about the involvement of this program in.
Brad, if you can hear us. I don't know if you recall, Brad, but we did have involvement from this program back when we were working on a school safety and security task force. And that may even have preceded your time as superintendent. But if you can hear us, and if you have anything to offer regarding how this EPR program may or may not be supporting school safety or anything else at the schools. I see that Colleen Kaneda has raised her hand, and I'm not sure if I pronounced your name correctly, Colleen, but go ahead if you've got something to offer to this conversation. Someone may need to tell Colleen how to unmute herself on a telephone.
She is unmuted. She can go ahead and speak.
All right. Well, it doesn't appear
Let's
that...
Let's keep putting people on the spot and see how it works out.
they don't have anything to offer to this conversation.
It's all good.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. We're running a little bit long here. Let's move on to the... Brad has raised his hand now.
I'm just to let you know I'm on, so...
Oh, okay. Good.
I was on another call, and I saw you were calling me, so I'm here.
So, hey, Brad... are you aware of any services that the school district receives from our emergency preparedness response coordinator? And this would be in reference to some memory I have from years ago when Robin Crossan and I worked together with that program on a school safety and security task force program. Do you remember any of that, or are you aware of any current support that you might be receiving from this program?
I'd have to look into it and probably talk to Pascal, Tim. I don't remember anything right off the top of my head. So
great. Thanks, Brad.
All right.
Let's go back to our continuing discussion on CDPHE contracts. Carrie, Mark?
Sure. So as it all seems to come back to this transition from last year to this year, with the transition of public health from Northwest Colorado Health last year, there was an opportunity to have some discussion about some of the contracts. And some of the contracts, as we know, were automatically transitioned over. Some of them weren't. Some of them remained at Northwest Colorado Health. And so we are, again, which is almost the repeat of the last conversation, we're in this contractual renewal year where July 1st, there's additionally, there's this opportunity for looking at some of these contracts. And
let me interrupt for a minute. I'm not sure who it is, but someone.
It's Kendra.
Oh, Kendra, do it yourself. Thank you.
So with this new year starting July 1st through June, it is an opportunity to take a look at some of these contracts that are still housed over at Northwest Colorado Health and see whether it would be appropriate or better for the community in order for us to potentially serve more people, do it differently, revamp. It's just kind of an opportunity for fresh eyes to look at this new contract year and see what we want to do. And so part of that conversation involves CDPHE, obviously, And we've had a few conversations with CDPHE, and they've outlined some of the contracts that would be potentially available for some discussion. And so I just wanted to bring to you that this letter requesting some additional conversation about those contracts to see if that's something that you're interested in doing, or if we want to wait, or what the different, what the temperature, I guess, is on these contracts. So I think the letter, you've seen the letter that was prepared. And Mark, do you have any additional comment to that?
No, Carrie, I think you've done a good job in again, providing the overview and the summary. But I think probably the most important message here is that there is support for this change on the part of CDPHE. And quite frankly, it seems like a cleaner process going forward that really, I think, is pretty much more their preferred prototype. And so we'd be more in alignment in terms of the other states and how this is handled by, the other counties and how this is handled by their individual public health agencies.
I'm totally supportive of us making this change, even if we end up just turning around and subcontracting it back out, just so that, like Mark said, it's consistent with the way the system is supposed to work, and that Route County and you as the public health director, Carrie, have full oversight of the public health money that's coming from the state into Route County. The only question I would have is just about the administrative burden of doing that and whether we feel prepared to handle that. So those would be my comments and questions.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, because obviously we are in the middle of a pandemic. And so, but in light of that, we are already having the conversations about staffing up and making sure that we have the appropriate resources available. And so I think that on the horizon for the next year, we would have the ability to do the administrative oversight on these contracts. And again, whether it's contracted back out or handled in-house, I feel comfortable with that. What I would like to say is, I think there's a lot of different models for public health within the state, and having some guidance from CDPHE about what are best practice models through sending this letter and talking to them about what they see being successful throughout the community, I think would be helpful. And so I think it's not just a send the letter and then get either a yes or no. I think it's having an ongoing dialogue with them about what they're seeing as being really successful within the state. So I would like to continue that conversation with them, depending on what they determine would be the most appropriate for our community.
So I guess I'm a little confused. Are we asking that we get to be assigned these, or are we telling them that we should be assigned these?
I think if we ask, they're going to give them to us. We don't
need to go to the demand that we get assigned these. And again, I'm fine with this, and I've said this all along. And again, I think we're into this new era, new version of what the county does, the county government does in public health. And so I'm fine with that. And again, so I think I've always been one of those persons who don't do it halfway. I just putting it nicely, that we don't do it halfway. And then if we're going to do something, we're going to do it and do it right and do it the best of our capabilities, and we'll figure out how to do it. So we've made this decision a year ago now. So, and I'm comfortable. We need to move forward and we need to move forward and figure out how we're going to do it. So
my question, Carrie, is does this all happen in the next 11 days?
It does, most likely. The one contract that we have received word that is going to be temporarily delayed is the tobacco prevention and education grant. So they are anticipating that would take some time to finalize all the contractual arrangements on that. So that wouldn't be until October. But yes, to answer on the other contract, the contractual date again is July through June, and so it would be a quick turnaround on this.
Carrie, one that we can handle.
We'll just throw it into the mix.
Very good.
Carrie, isn't the tobacco one the one that we decided we were going to take over like 4 months ago? And yet that's the one that's
going to be- Right. It is. And it's kind of interesting, actually, because the state is having the state tobacco committee meeting, and they have a process to switch over. And it's actually being voted on today. I think what happened, my perception is that that meeting was delayed or canceled several different times where the vote needed to happen in order to make this happen. And so the vote is actually scheduled for today on it. And I think that plays in.
Just one other quick question, Carrie. Have you received any indication that the state would be considering continuing the allowance for some of these contract funds to be shifted over to COVID response temporarily? Because I think that's another huge reason that we need to be in control of these contracts.
I haven't. We just had a call with Dan and Sean, and I haven't heard that, but that doesn't seem like it would be an unrealistic next move because we're continuing throughout this. And especially given that CDPHE has said we need to plan for 30 months of COVID response. So that seems congruent to that messaging too.
All right. I kind of feel we're at another point here where we've given adequate direction. Do you guys agree that we're directing staff to move forward with taking over these contracts? Yep.
Yep. I'm good with that. Sometime, Carrie, you'll need to come back and, you know, just give us the new outline of what Carrie Public Health is and the rest. So since we're morphing it every day. We morph it a little bit. So somehow we just need to, you know, and we're getting ready to go into budget, 2021 budget as well. So we need to kind of know. And again, I'm not feeling my arm twisted or whatever, but I do think we need to make sure that we kind of understand what we're obligating ourselves to and where we're going. So sorry about the phone call.
So just to recap then, this meeting is serving as permission to submit the letter to CDPHE from the commissioners, or from, is it coming from Mark or is it coming from the commissioners requesting this? It's coming from Mark. I'm seeing Beth saying no.
I'm shrugging. I don't care. Whoever it needs to come from.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, okay. You can put our names on it.
Yeah, if it would be more useful to have it come from the commissioners or have more impact, fine. But it sounds to me like you guys have this pretty well figured out.
Doug.
No, let's go ahead and I'll finish up.
Well, if I remember correctly, once those contracts come through, we actually approve each of them anyway. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Go ahead, Doug. Correct.
Yeah, so I just wanted to echo what Beth said. So I don't care whether it comes from Mark and that the commissioners have indicated or supported, or whether it comes from us, either way. So I think, like I said, we're all in here or we're not in here. So we're all in on it. So we need to figure out how, and you know, it's we move on and we do our things.
To close out this conversation, I thought it was interesting. I was looking for some stuff that came from Carrie, and I just did a search in my email for emails from Carrie Landreau. And the very first one was on June 19th of 2019 was her first update. So I feel like this is an interesting point in time. We're 1 year into this new adventure of taking over public health. And while I think we can all agree it's been a rocky ride for any number of reasons, but it feels like a turning point. We're really going to be getting to a point where we have a really strong local public health department for Rouse County. So thank you, Carrie, for, I don't know if it was your 1 year anniversary of being hired. You were probably hired slightly before that, but it's been just about a year since we jumped into this.
June 11th.
Who's counting?
Have you had your review yet?
We haven't seen your performance evaluation.
But I do feel like a lot has happened. I can say that.
Great, thank you. All right, I think we're ready to move on to our purchasing item, which is, or not a purchasing item, I'm sorry, a public works item, which is a CDOT access permit. Do we have Ray, Mike, who's bringing this one forward?
I am.
So I have a question for our staff and for Kendra and Deanna. So I asked last night, so where's our agenda items for all this stuff? And then I see in the on the packet, so I see on our agenda, there was supposed to be some things that were in there. So, and I'm good going forward. I tell my wife, I can go blindly anywhere you want to go. So, you know, we're good. So, but anyhow, so how come we didn't have some stuff on some backup on these next two items, actually?
I'm not seeing that they're missing. I see the backup on there. So what is it that you're not seeing? And have you refreshed your screen? Are you looking through the internet at the current agenda?
Yeah, Doug, we do on the current agenda that's posted on the website. While we didn't have anything for the EPR discussion, I think we do have the full package of information for the CDOT item.
I just pulled it up a second ago. I'll refresh it again and see, because I did again twice this morning to try and figure out what, you know, what the, anyhow, I'm good. I'll stay with it. Go from there.
Go ahead, Mike.
All right. Good morning. I'm in front of you guys today to get a commissioner's signature on a CDOT access permit for the intersection of US 40 and County Road 42. This came about with the construction of the new school, and you know, we allowed the school to submit the application based on the traffic study and that, and CDOT came back and said ultimately, because it's a county road accessing the state highway, that they'll need the county signature. And then in conversations with CDOT, they recommended that there be a kind of a joint understanding that it'll be the responsibility of the development, in this case, the new Sleeping Giant School, that would be responsible for the 6 pages of terms and conditions, the 48 separate items of terms and conditions, you know, that'll take place. And it's just the county's signature that they need because it is the county road. But Brian Killian, who's the new Dan Rusin for Tim and Doug, Beth, I don't know if you ever knew Dan Rusin, but he was the access manager for this region. Anyway, Brian Killian, I've worked with him since I moved to Steamboat through CDOT, and he's worked his way up. So Brian is the new access manager is what I'm trying to say. And he recommended that this happens quite a bit across the region, that a developer comes in, gains their access off of the county road, but is responsible for the improvements needed for that access. In this case, it's, you know, traffic light, intersection improvements, traffic detection loops, and the like for that. So in conjunction with Eric and Superintendent Meeks and the school's attorney, we went back and forth with language in the letter. The school has signed the letter basically saying that they'll be responsible for any of the improvements that'll be made concerning the intersection. Just the intersection, we haven't gotten to the roundabout yet. Well, that's a whole different topic that we'll bring up once we see plans, final plans for the roundabout. This is just the intersection of 42 and 40. And so we'll get the commissioner's signature on the letter as well as the access permit. And then that will allow the school to move forward with starting to plan for and start ordering parts, the mast arms, the signals, all that stuff for the intersection.
Questions for staff?
I just have a comment. So a couple comments. So first off, I still can't pull up the stuff. So I've been pulling up and refreshed it twice. But anyhow,
I'll email it to you, Doug.
That'd be good. So I'm sure you guys have looked through it, and I'm sure it's very good. I guess the second thing I just want to comment on, I'm still disappointed that we couldn't have some type of a throughway on from the west going to the east that wasn't a part of the stoplight. just like they have when you're going south out of Mesa mm-hmm. County out of Grand Junction heading to Mount Lloyd. There's a free lane that's on the right-hand side, and I can't believe that we could say that there wasn't room there, especially on, you know, it's on the side of kind of a cliff above the river, but there wasn't area there to be able to allow that to happen. So I'm good with whatever, but, you know, I don't know. It's just like, okay.
I know. And a lot of these came at the recommendation of CDOT through their reporting and the traffic engineer and the back and forth with the review from the traffic engineer.
I have a question. So by virtue of this agreement, the direct responsibility to CDOT is from Route County to CDOT. So it's up to Route County to ensure that the Steamboat Springs School District does what is included in this.
Minor, a little bit of oversight. Essentially what happens at the end of this is when they build this out, CDOT comes, they do the final inspection, and then CDOT prepares an access construction inspection in summary, sends it to the applicant, and then a 2-year warranty period, which will still be covered by the developer acceptance is issued. So if any warranty issues come up, that's still on them as well.
Yeah, I think I'm just splitting a legal hair here.
Sure.
The responsible party to CDOT is Route County. And the Steamboat Springs School District is responsible to fulfill the terms of the agreement. But yeah, I mean, correct. The only risk there would be if for some inconceivable reason the Steamboat Springs School District did not do what they were supposed to do, then.
And that's what Brian warned us of. That's why we've got the letter. That's why we've got dual signatures on the permit and the like.
Okay, great. Did we, Brad, or anybody else from the school district, did you guys want to make any comment on this before we move on to a motion?
Am I unmuted or not?
You're okay. Unmuted. Go ahead, Brad.
All right. No, I just, you know, we just appreciate, you know, we're learning about the process too as we're going through all these things. I think as Mike indicated, we're just, you know, this is just to get us through the intersection area, and then the roundabout will be a later discussion. But I think I just concur with what Commissioner Corrigan said. Yeah, it'd be the district's responsibility to do the improvements and follow the agreement. You know, a set forth here. So that's our intention.
Great. Thank you, Brad. Mm-hmm. I think I'm ready to entertain a motion unless someone feels the necessity to add something to this conversation.
I can make a motion since Doug doesn't seem to have any materials.
So. That'd be good.
Agenda, so we're good. I've been blind, you know, I've been the blind quite often, you know, so it's.
Don't worry about it, Doug. Just trust Beth and I. We'll tell you what to do. It'll all be good.
Is it the mosquitoes chewing up your internet?
Yeah. We need to have some spray in here, you know.
Oh,
so.
My God. I don't even.
We're staying out of that one.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the commissioner's signature on the Colorado Department of Transportation issued access permit at the intersection of US 40 and County Road 42 as a result of the increased traffic from the new Sleeping Giant School. Oh, sorry, that's not the whole thing. Amended motion. I read the wrong part. Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize you to sign the Colorado Department of Transportation issued access permit for the intersection of US 40 and Route County Road 42 without all that extraneous information I added.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Kendra, will you be sending that to me via DocuSign?
Yes.
Good. Thank you very much.
I just sent it all to you, Doug, all the info.
Thank you.
Minus the communication.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
All right, let's move on to our purchasing item.
Yes.
Julie, are you with us?
Hello.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Joseph Boyle should be joining us, but I don't see him yet. And Stacy McDowell might be signing on as well, but we can get started.
Okay. Go ahead and give us what you want.
I'm here.
Where's Lieutenant Boyle?
Oh, did he join?
So I think everybody's with us, Julie. Go ahead.
Perfect. All right. So we are here to request the Board of County Commissioners authorize the purchase of one telehealth cart face-to-face with vitals and PE from Care on Location PC. It's a state bid in the amount of $22,874 through the Colorado Department of Human Services Office of Behavioral Health grant for the Route County Sheriff's Department. So this is a telehealth cart. I think I attached all the information to the documents that will be available in the jail for monitoring inmates and office staff. It does many different functions, but it basically alleviates the need and the resources for transporting prisoners or officers needing to go into the hospital for a checkup. And if you want to take over, Joe, I mean, this is a grant-funded process. The state of Colorado went out and secured an RFI. They received, I think, 14 responses from different manufacturers. And Joe has selected Care on Location as the one that would be the best fit for the jail. So what it is the state has issued the purchase orders. We've received the invoice for the equipment. And as soon as we receive the state purchase order, we just send both into the state and the grant pays us for this equipment. So really we're just bringing in an IT asset with this grant is the way I understand it. Correct, Joe?
That's correct. Yep, it's funded through the state.
And all the paperwork has been done for us, and they see this as something that's pretty valuable, especially when you're looking at COVID-19 and different pandemics that might pop up or viruses. You know, it also can do a lot of the health assessment that currently is being done by the nurse. The nurse would be interpreting these tests that are done on the teledoc, but I just think it's a very valuable tool, and we're very fortunate that this grant was offered to us.
Yeah, this equipment is gonna open up a huge range of possibilities for us as mental health. It can also be used for mental health in a MAP program. We have been struggling, as you all know, for a long time with MindSpring's Health to provide as many hours as they can. This can allow more hours through multiple different contractors through mental health. And it also does the more medical side of it as well. Whereas if we have to have someone brought to a doctor's appointment, the doctor's appointment can be done completely virtual. All the tools and instruments the physician needs is right there on the equipment. They're face to face with each other, and our nurse is there to hear the continuation of care that's needed. So it's, in my mind, it's a lot, it's really safe, and just way, it's definitely beneficial to our agency, and it's definitely something that more agencies are going towards. And I'm fortunate enough that the state, this is through the state. So
questions for Julie or Lieutenant Boyle?
Just out of curiosity, was this already planned, or is this new money that became available from the state in response to COVID?
I believe this was already planned. I don't believe that this was something in response to COVID. I think this was something that they were looking to initiate and has been on the discussion table since the JBBS program and the grant has started. So it just took this long to get their ducks in a row and figure out how they're going to do it. It hasn't always been the easiest working, figuring out the ins and outs of it. But Yes, it was not in response to COVID. This was something that they've been planning on doing and using as a tool to help mental health services in jails, in remote areas, more rural communities that don't have the resources that other big cities have.
Well, I don't have any other questions, and I would just continue to compliment you, Lieutenant Boyle, on your commitment to supporting mental health for the folks who are in our jail. I think it's really critical. So thank you for your continued advocacy for that.
You're welcome.
I just have a comment and a question. First of all, Lieutenant Boyle, that's a great looking beard. And second of all,
I'm waiting for you to compliment his beard.
No. My question is, what kind of dye do you use on your beard to make it look like that?
My wife is right here. She can tell you there's no dye. You can see the gray hairs coming in. She's pretty quick to point them out.
All right. Good. Well, yeah.
I think you look pretty goofy with a beard that color.
Yeah. you can see some of the gray peeking through in my beard, too.
Oh, yeah. Just a little bit.
All right. I think I'm ready to, unless, Doc, do you have any comments?
No, I don't have any comments. And Beth, you'll need to make this motion. I tried again and they still can't get them.
It's so weird. No problem. I'm happy to do it. And there's no shortage of beard compliments. I feel like we need like a COVID-19 beard facial hair gallery, because every person that we get in a call, I'm like impressed by how great their facial hair has gotten.
Yeah. And we're getting ready to go.
Every guy.
Well, every guy. I think if you start complimenting women's facial hair, you might be in the wrong territory.
You might be thankful you're on a video chat.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize the purchase of one telehealth cart face-to-face vitals PE from Care on Location PC state bid in the amount of $22,874 through the Colorado Department of Human Services Office of Behavioral Health grant for the Route County Sheriff's Department.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Lieutenant Boyle. Have a
Thank
great
you very
time.
Much.
Thank you.
Later.
Thank you. Yep.
No problem, Jim.
All right. Doug, you'll be glad to know that there's no more attachments you're going to be missing out on for the rest of the discussion.
Tim, I just want to say we might be done by then, but I have to leave at 12:30. I'm going to get an MRI finally on my spine for that pain I've been having for forever. So anyway, I'm going to need to leave at 12:30 if we're not finished by then.
I have good reason to believe that we might be done by then, unless there's something.
Never know. I just wanted to throw it out there.
Never know.
The attachments are weird. I mean, the only thing I get when I pull up the attachment for the whole packet on the meeting is that silly invoice. There's an invoice out there. And so, and Deanna had said yesterday that, well, that thing got loaded onto the screen, and that's the only thing that comes up. And I've turned off the computer, turned it back on, and so I don't know what it is. So, West Route.
The only specific item I have is, do we want to adjust our agenda for Monday to allow for attendance at the Western District meeting that starts at 10 a.m. for CCI?
I'm fine with adjusting whatever makes sense. You've attended those in the past, and I haven't attended any of them, but you said you thought they were valuable. So I'd be happy to either just have one person or all of us.
You've been to Western District meetings in person?
No, I mean these virtual ones that have happened over the last couple of months.
Yeah. Well, this one's, they are valuable, frankly. I mean, anytime we get an opportunity to hear from our fellow commissioners, and I know that one of the discussion items is how different counties are approaching CARES allocations, and there's I think I saw that there's going to be some DOLA input, so it really would be valuable, at least for me to attend, to try to bring this CARES allocation to the finish line. So, there is an election for the president of the Western District and the vice president as well. So,
what time is that?
We should. Huh?
What time
is
it?
Yeah.
10 a.m. And typically they last about, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours. So
I'm happy to adjust the meeting. I do have we have our desk transition committee right at 1:00. So I won't be able to stay on long.
So the question would be, do we want to plan on one or all of us attending the Western District meeting from 10 o'clock till say 12 o'clock and then starting our Monday agenda at 12 o'clock, knowing that you have to leave when at 1 o'clock?
Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good idea, but I guess I'd just ask how much adjustment might be needed and if the items that are currently scheduled could be reasonably moved to other days if necessary.
Yeah, I guess my question was, what's on the agenda? What do we have? So, and again, one of us needs to be there for sure. Yeah. I would like to listen in too. So I don't know. So
let's just say we need to adjust our agenda. And if we need to go longer, say like on Tuesday, I can do longer on Tuesday. I just can't do longer on Monday. So I would just, maybe we just ask staff to adjust the agenda to accommodate that.
Kendra? What do you got for us?
Yep. So as I'm looking at the agenda right now, I don't know what Deanna has gotten in last minute. I know we had some additional consent items that were going to be coming in for Tuesday. But right now for Monday, we just have the county manager and legal.
Perfect.
So let's set it up that way. You'll have to show on the agenda that one or more of the commissioners will be attending the Western District meeting from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, and then we'll start our regular agenda at 12, from 12 to 1, and we'll do the county manager update and the legal update, and go ahead and adjourn at 1 o'clock.
And then it sounds like maybe, Mark, do you have the information to attend that Western District meeting also?
Yep.
I believe I was copied on that, and if I have it, Kendra can get it to me, but I believe almost certain that I was.
And if we're starting the meeting at 12, we don't need to put on the agenda that you guys are doing something earlier. You just mean to put it on your meeting calendar because the three of you will be attending, right?
Yes. Okay.
Yep. One or more.
Got it.
I have just two things. The first is I was excited to see that public health is partnering with the Ski Corps and testing. And I guess I was just thinking, and maybe this is, I see that Robin maybe isn't here anymore. So Kendra, maybe this is just a note for you. I just thought perhaps those thank you letters that we've sent out, that thank you letters to the businesses that have been partnering on testing might be good. So perhaps we could get a list of who those businesses are from Carrie and send a thank you from the commissioners to those businesses for partnering on testing.
Yep. Do you think Scott would have the same list? I just know Carrie is super busy, so I'm wondering if maybe Scott would have.
You can ask.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. But I know for sure that Rex has been doing it. I know that Ski Corps has, and I don't know who else. I think it would just be a nice gesture.
I think Mo might have it as well. So.
Yeah, whoever. But if we could just do that, that would be my request. And then I do think we need to at least have some discussion about the variance request. So just a couple comments. The public health order it finally is posted, and the state is making a change and going to 100 indoors and 175 outdoors. which is the same as what we were requesting in that phase two for our variance. But then, so I just, I sent that on to the chamber and I said, hey, just a heads up, obviously we're gonna need to talk about this. And the response I got was that the guidelines and the rules that the state put out will not work for any indoor venues in Route County, that they won't be doable. And I don't really know why, but based on the way they're calculating the maximum for square footage and that kind of thing. So I don't know what the details of that are, but I guess I don't think we're going to solve it without conversation with Carrie and an understanding from the venue owners in Route County about what's needed. But I guess my suggestion would be that we ask that the chamber give us their specific comments and that we just revisit that in conversation next week before it's actually submitted. I don't want to put a bunch of more work on Carrie, but I think we need a recommendation on how we proceed, given that the state did something different than we were expecting them to do. And I will just add my two cents that this makes me really reticent to pursue any other variance work, because this is the second time that we've asked Carrie to do a lot of work that ends up being somewhat irrelevant.
No, totally irrelevant, not somewhat, totally irrelevant.
Well, the phase three where we go to 250 is still possibly a benefit, but given how short-staffed public health is, this just is really frustrating to feel like we asked Carrie to do this work for nothing.
Well, not only that, but look at all the industry groups and all of the meetings that they've had and all of the back and forth and the requests. And it's fascinating, because yesterday I asked you the question, do you think now that the state is finally at this place where, we won't get any more surprises? Hell, we couldn't make it 24 hours.
Well, and they didn't even really make that clear. It was sort of buried. I mean, they didn't come out and say, hey, we used double the numbers that we were planning to use. It just is there. Like, oh, it was going to be 50, but surprise, it's 100. But anyway, that would just be my comment. And I think that makes sense. We just get a recommendation from the chamber and from public health on what actually makes sense given the changes that have happened here.
So now, wait a minute, I need to understand. It doesn't really make any difference what our variance request is. It just got superseded by the state, right?
Well, it hasn't been submitted yet, Tim. And
I understand that. So are we worried that our variance request is now going to be more restrictive than what the state rule is?
No, it just doesn't make sense, because we were going to request what the state rule now is. But I think there's two things. One was the feedback that I got from the chamber when I sent that on, that the rules that the state put in place actually are not going to work for the venues in Route County. And so I'd like some more specifics about that, because there may still be a reason to request a variance with regards to how the capacity is calculated. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is that next phase where we go up to 250. And my question would be, would we still want to proceed with that happening on July 31st, which is what we were originally requesting, or would we want to move that date up to being, more like 3 or 4 weeks from now, given that the state sort of bunny hopped over where we were headed? So, yeah, it's just a question.
I think they tromped on us with a great big foot.
It was a really inarticulate bunny hop. What's the word I'm looking for? But anyway, I guess my thought would be, we hear from Carrie and we hear from those industry groups about, does anything still make sense? And if so, what? and then we revisit that next week would be my suggestion.
I'm a little confused. I thought we sent off the variance request.
Apparently not.
I guess
it hasn't been submitted yet.
Yeah, we approved the letter on Tuesday. So I kind of, and you know, when we've actually been out there on the press that, well, yeah, that we approved, sent out the variance.
According to what I saw from Carrie this morning, it hasn't been sent out yet. She had to get a signature from the hospital also, and she had to make some adjustments to that document to reflect the change. So my guess is it hasn't gotten done quite yet because of those things.
I think the last signature she got was late yesterday afternoon. So I think that was a big part of the delay.
So do we need to have a motion to pull that and hold it and reconsider or before
we stop? Yeah, actually someone probably ought to make sure that Carrie doesn't submit it as is right now. Right.
Well, you guys saw the email I sent this morning, and her response is how I knew she hadn't submitted it yet. And she basically said, what would you guys like me to do? So
wait till Monday so we know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Well, and again, my response was the kind of the concept that, well, we're already going above and beyond the requirements. Right. And so maybe we ought to be asking for a little bit more. We've been asked from our citizens to be asking for a little bit more. So, you know, and especially from now and are still, it's still our local herd. So I don't know.
The events are not really our local herd, right?
We're having.
I actually, you know, I've been a little bit in pushing back on what you've said regarding that, but I actually agree with you in this case, considering that what I understood from the chamber is that the way the state is calculating maximum occupancy is very problematic for the indoor venues in Rout County. And so I do think there's justification to say, hey, we're requiring face masks inside so we can get a few more people in there. We can calculate occupancy a little bit different way and we can do that safely. And I think you're right. And I think there is justification to do that.
Carrie, I'm so excited to hear about another opportunity to rewrite the variance request.
So it's a full rewrite. I think it's actually requesting what we were already requesting. It's just
moving the data.
What the variance is a little different. You know, we're requesting a variance in terms of how we calculate the occupancy for that 175 rather than actually an increase in the gathering size or whatever. I don't know.
Here we are, the people that are most intimately involved in the monitoring and pursuing and writing this stuff. And we really just don't know what's going on. Can you imagine anybody else out there in the public having any idea what's going on? I mean, this is bordering on insane. And like I said, I don't mind being called insane. I just don't want to be called a tyrant. So,
well, you're going to keep getting called a tyrant, Tim. Don't get used to that. But I think you guys are right. I think we let Carrie know, hey, let's hold off and figure out what's actually needed now that we have the actual public health order. And we do have some input from our industry groups that says that the way the state is doing this is unworkable for the majority of indoor venues in Rout County. And so that's that local context that's really important for us to consider. So,
is there any good reason why this conversation couldn't wait until Wednesday's regular public health talk? I mean, it seems to me that the urgency to get the variance request in has been diminished by the fact that the state has already opened it up quite a bit.
We can't do anything right now, right? And we can't do anything before Monday. And so
on Monday, we have a limited agenda. Tuesday is probably going to fill up a little bit. I don't think Carrie needs to have any additional meetings scheduled. And no, it might be beneficial to have Monday and Tuesday to gather some more information so we can have a rational conversation on Wednesday. And that's optimistic.
The only caveat I would put on that, Tim, is if Carrie says, I think if Carrie were to say to us, you know, given the situation, I'm actually advising that we go ahead and submit our variance request as is, then I don't think anything is needed from us. You know, if she thought that the way it's currently drafted should be how we proceed.
And there's got to be a mechanism by which the state would accept some amendments to a variance request, especially when that variance request needed to be changed because of what the state did.
Well, it hasn't been submitted yet, so.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
All good with me.
I guess I would just say maybe, Mark, I assume you can sort of communicate that with Carrie. Did you follow what was discussed there? Yeah, okay.
Thank God for a county manager that can follow what's going on. Jesus.
Are you done then, Beth? So,
I am.
Oh, I just short thing. So I sent out an email this morning after our conversation with Kathy yesterday too. And Beth, you responded to that too. So Mark, I hope you can follow up. And because that comp time, if we have comp time out there that's in relationship to the COVID, we needed to pay that out. We were always assuming that we were going to pay that out and not carry comp time through the year. So, and we needed to get it on the books and get it paid for so that, and pay it out so that we can get it recorded. So I just wanted to bring that up.
And what I said, what you guys remember about what our direction was, that comp time is discouraged in general and prohibited for COVID-19 hours, correct? Did I get that right? I'm asking Tim and Doug so we can make sure Mark has clear.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know that we had it prohibited for COVID-19, because I mean we had the ones that were working the EOC that were in that, so that's,
well, we wanted them to book overtime though, because comp time can't be reimbursed.
Okay. Same thing then. Yes, so we wanted to book it and we wanted to pay it because we didn't know when we were going to be able to use it, have them use it. So yes, we need to pay
and
it.
We know that it's not FEMA reimbursable if it's comp time.
Yes. Yep. Agreed totally.
Right. In follow-up to your question, Doug, or your observation, we had in our department head meeting yesterday, that was the first and most important topic of conversation. And I reiterated to everybody that we've got good fair warning on this and that we are asking everybody from top to bottom that they begin to utilize any of the accrual to have vacation or comp time. We've got many, many months to work with. We know it's a different environment. We've all got to adapt. We've all got to adjust to that. But a very important heads up to everybody to make sure that we begin to draw down those totals so that we don't have to face some difficult circumstances at the end of the year. So everybody's had good conversation. Everybody understood. And I'm sure we'll get good follow through on that going forward.
I think the history also, though, is that we have some people who really like comp time and really like accruing comp time, and that we've had to ask department heads to keep a tight handle on that, that is not the preferred method. Am I right about that?
Hell, it's written into policy.
Okay. Just making sure we all are clear.
Beth, I have a lot of experience with that. From my years in Wyoming, comp time meant having time for hunting season. So we had that as an ongoing dilemma.
Speaking of which, and I know this may be a non-issue for Commissioner Monger, but I'm actually would like to consider the possibility of taking a week off sometime this summer. And if I'm going to do that, and I don't have anything planned yet, but I know that my wife is kind of jabbing me a bit on this. So Beth, if you've got a specific time frame that you'd like to take some time off, just so that we coordinate it so we're not both gone at the same time.
Yeah, that same thing at my house. We just had this conversation yesterday, because actually in relation to yesterday's conversation, Will has a bunch of vacation time that he is expected to use up.
Oh, great. Well, you've got someone to watch Clark. That's awesome.
Well, Clark's daycare reopens on July 1st, so that's very exciting too. But yeah, we were talking about trying to find a week to take off too. So let's just
put that. I just wanted to put that out there on the radar. Yeah.
Or we could all take the same week off and just leave Mark to his own.
Well, you know, that's also an option, is to choose a week that we're not going to meet. But that feels a little bit irresponsible in light of current conditions. I think we need this body needs to meet every week.
Well, I mean, I think we at least need two commissioners around and available in case something is needed.
Yep.
Doug, you planning any big vacations?
We can't go to Maui now.
I'm locked here, man. So my vacation is out there driving tractor and moving some dirt around or spraying weeds. And yeah, we're moving cows this weekend. So we're all good. But, you know, again, the other thing we might talk about too is, and again, I don't mean to be a PIA either. So, but we might maybe adjust the schedule a little bit too. So, you know, maybe since it's summer and the rest, maybe we can start earlier and that way I can at least have half a day out there in the field or something.
Yeah. I'm happy to start earlier.
I am too. That's not a problem.
My problem. I feel
like the later start time has always been accommodating you, Doug, and the things you need to do in the morning. So whatever time you want to start, I'm fine.
Yep.
That sounds good.
Mark, do you have anything for us?
No, commissioners, thanks.
I just had one other thing. This is so we've been sending out thank yous for COVID and the rest. Should we send one to City Council for turning down the triple crowd?
So. Nope. We need to stay out of it.
I don't know about specific to turning down Triple Crown, but I mean, I think we already sent them a letter thanking them for being partners in our public health efforts. I mean, I think they're committed to protecting public health. Quite frankly, I have to say, looking at the new, just glancing at the new public health order, Triple Crown is still pretty explicitly prohibited. So I can't imagine that their variance request is going to go anywhere. It doesn't seem like something the state is particularly interested in entertaining, but I think removing the ambiguity was really helpful.
Well, no, they don't need to make a variance request anyway. We would have to do it.
No, but we asked them. We said we would not make a variance request without their support for doing that.
Yeah, you know, that's all I had. Yeah.
Very good. Well, it's been even though we're getting off early today, it's been a long week. Thank all of you for remaining engaged. It's been it's hard at times.
Well, I have one other thing back to Carrie and this ERP thing, or
EPR
thing. I think, you know, we really need to probably do some thinking about how we want to design that. Let's not let them design that. Let's us figure that out and with our fellow commissioners and come up with some type of thing that might be best for us. And so,
why don't we start with raising it at the Western District meeting?
So that's a good idea. So, and again, I'm just thinking about that. You know, the best thing that happens is when we take the bull by the horns and we just, you know, and take it on and we design it how we want. If we think this is a program that needs to move forward, we ought to be able to design how it's affected and how the commissioners should be part of it. So I just wanted to throw that out to think about over the weekend.
Does someone want to send it to CCI staff and the whoever's in charge of the Western District and just say, hey, this is something we'd like to talk about?
We'll have the opportunity to bring it up.
Well, Tim, the only reason I say that is just because somebody's going to have to provide some background information on what this even is. My guess is that the commissioners in that group probably are not any more familiar with it than we are. That's the only reason I suggested maybe sending it ahead of time.
I mean, I can send an email to Daphne saying that Rauch County would like to have a discussion about the regional EPRs and maybe just include a little bit of information about what our concerns here are out of Rauch County. I can do that.
That'd be good.
Well, and I don't know, my thought here was maybe more into, and again, whether you like your cog or not like your cog, but it still might be something that's feasible in a cog. You know, and actually give some local government purpose for those cogs, and it helps sustain them as well by having, you know, whether it's, you know, anyhow, I'm just wanted to throw that out. So maybe it's not Western District, CCI or whatever, but I'm just trying to think out loud here. Actually, I think the cog ideas might be just a hell of a good idea. I've been frustrated ever since I've been a commissioner about how many different partners we have on different things, and every little thing has a different region, and so they're never the same statewide, especially us in the mountains. We just get mixed here with this and here with that, and so anyhow. So
my suggestion about Western District was really that would be a place to start the conversation and brainstorm, like you're talking about, Doug, like how should this work, or at least put it on people's radar that they should be paying attention to what a stupid program this is in the way it's structured.
I'm not going to put it in the email like that, but
we can say it in the meeting, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So Doug, on the earlier start time, I'd say just tell us what time you want to start, and we can ask Kendra and Deanna to, you know, start, like, change our agendas, whether it's, you know, I think we should give a little leeway so that we're not having to start adjusting, but maybe it's not this Monday but the following Monday or whatever. Just as far as I'm concerned, just tell us what you want.
Yep, that sounds good. Yep, so 8:30 or 9 or something like that would be good. Yeah, 8 o'clock even, so yeah, especially when we're doing it like this. So
I would suggest that you that it not be right at 8 o'clock, just so that Kendra and Deanna have an opportunity to get into the office and get set up, you know. So
I think 8:30 or 9 would be great, and that it'll be nice to just be able to put everything else kind of in the afternoon rather than these meetings bleeding into the afternoon. The only thing is adjusting the Board of Health time and making sure that Carrie and Dr. Harrington are available to do that a little bit earlier if possible.
That sounds good. I like it.
Yep. So we can start adjusting whenever you guys want to. We don't have the agendas up for Monday and Tuesday yet, especially given we were just talking about adjusting the time for Monday even.
So Kendra, I wouldn't do next week just because personally, I probably would have to change a bunch of meetings on my calendar. You know, I've scheduled around this, but I think the following week would probably be fine, personally.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good. And then we'll reach out to Carrie. Do you want to change the Board of Health times then to start the Board of Health at 9:30?
I think on Wednesdays? If we want to adjust everything earlier, we should just adjust everything earlier. But okay. But if that doesn't work for Carrie and Brian, then we should keep it where it is.
Yep.
We'll have time to discuss it next week.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? Nope. Great. Thank you. Y'all have a great weekend. See you on Monday.
Thank you.